C4. Number 7B.
Now we come to the fourth chapter or the fourth box. And we would have to think out something, namely that up to this point of the third box, word as Christianity, we have not yet asked, but how can I really see God's nature? We have started out in prayer that we saw God's nature is within me, and that is my starting point, but the thought asks now, in the relative, how do I know and perceive and conceive and comprehend and apprehend what is God's nature and what is not God's nature? I must now have a sense that I must have a method of understanding the divine, so that I'm not fooled by opposite arguments and accept perhaps unreality as reality, or the other way, that I refuse reality and accept unreality. I must have somehow a method of understanding what is real, what is unreal, a method of understanding what is God's nature and what is not God's nature. And this is therefore necessary, and so I would feel in that fourth box that here I would have to have a divinely scientific method of understanding what is God's nature and what is not God's nature. So the chapter on Christian Science versus Spiritualism actually would show that. It would show that spirit, the reality of God, and spiritualism, which is defacing the reality of God, but still claiming that it is the real nature. See, spiritualism claims to be in contact with reality, though it is a mixed sense of spirit and matter. I must be able to see very clearly how to distinguish between reality and unreality. That is the message of Christian Science versus, see, you have the two, one and the two, how to understand reality, how to understand what is unreality. I have to have a method of distinguishing between God's nature and the nature that is God unlike. That's the chapter on spiritualism. Now, how could you perhaps summarize this in the fourth box? Perhaps you could say, what shall we say? The scientific method of understanding reality or distinguishing reality from unreality. I think just with those few words you epitomize it rather clearly. But when you study them all over the year, don't feel that you have to stick to these epitomes just as they are stated. Try to feel always the tonality. Because on the West Coast I have given another rendering. I've just given it as it came out of the atmosphere we are now. It's not even on my notes, you know. I just try to take it as thought flows so that you get the tonality of it, and not the words I have perhaps put down 2 years ago when I did do that chart, that matrix. So can you see what that chapter means? It means I should know and be able and have a method to distinguish between God's nature and all that which seems or tries to parade as God's nature, but is not God's nature. See, spiritualism always says, well, I'm in contact with reality, with the immortal beings on the other side, and they give me message, and they tell me all about themselves and about us. So spiritualism also tries to show that they have God's nature, that they are in contact with divine nature. So, but we can see that that is only a belief, a masquerading, and not the reality of it, and I must have a method how to distinguish between reality and unreality. By the way, this is the question, you know, you have in this chapter where she says, how can I distinguish between ideas and illusions? That's the very question she puts there. So it is, as an answer to the scientific understanding, which we have here on the horizontal, that is scientific understanding, which gives us the method and the means of how to distinguish between the real and the unreal. Yes. Can you see the flow? And when we see the flow, can we see from there the practical use of such a matrix? The practical use would be, first of all, that our thought, wherever that thought is always pushed to the next one. It shows which step to take next. Many people like to stay with prayer, and that's all they do. They pray, and they feel if I have prayed, that's fine, I have done my work. So if the world goes astray, and if the world is in trouble, they say, how can I help the world? The only thing I can do is to pray. That's the usual attitude in religion. So they pray for the world, that the world is better, and the Pope is praying for the world, and ask all the Christians to pray for peace. So they pray for peace. All right, that's fine. But that is only the first step in a long sequence. And therefore, if we feel that's that, and that's what we have to do, then we can see that this doesn't do the trick. And therefore, all the praying that has gone on for 2,000 years, no matter about what, has all been in vain, vain repetition, it never did the trick. There was never peace on earth, and it doesn't seem that humanity has become better ethically, morally, spiritually. It has improved somehow in its intellectual sense. But why? Because the matrix would push us further and say, look here, that's all right to pray. That's where you find your first strength. That's where you root yourself first mentally. But then you jolly well have to do something about it. You don't have to say, I prayed and that's the end. Now you have to get up from your knees and do something. And Atonement and Eucharist ask therefore to accept the demands and to overcome within us, not within the other, within us, to overcome within us as much as we can, the human, by mobilizing prayer, the divine, so that with prayer in our heart we go out into the world and begin to overcome the human with the divine. And even that brings us to a point where we feel, but I can't always just overcome the human and the erroneous in me. I also must see that I stick closer and closer to the divine. And so marriage will tell us how, really, through sticking closer and closer to the divine in the human is a higher sense of humanhood and brings out a better sense of man. And I have quite an improved sense of man. And even then, when I have an improved sense of humanhood, I have to be very careful because this is still vulnerable until I have a scientific understanding. Because I must know what really I should overcome. Or I may try to overcome something that is good, not knowing that it is good. I may fight a wrong fight, a wrong warfare. And therefore I must have a clear-cut distinction of what is the divine nature and what is the human nature. And therefore, I must find the spiritually scientific method of how to distinguish between reality and unreality. Therein we will find not only that sentence, how can I distinguish between ideas and illusion, but there we will have those long passages of divine mind reading and mortal mind reading, how only with divine mind reading we can perceive the reality of things, and that mortal mind reading can never perceive the reality of things. There in that chapter we have all the methods, so to say, how to make the reality understood and the methods used in order to distinguish between the real and the unreal. Yes. Then when I have done that, I feel now I have understood what is the nature of God. And at that point I feel so I can now see how God translates himself as idea. And that gives a cut, and I go to the next vertical, to the Christ column. So we come to the second vertical, to the Christ column, where we see that here the absolute sense of the Christ is that God is not sitting somewhere up on the throne in heaven, but that it is a divine principle, and that divine principle always translates itself to every plane of thought. That because principle has an idea, it translates itself in infinite ideas, that's the vertical, from the relative sense, I begin to see that if principle translates itself in infinite ideas, that these ideas are going to resolve an illusion, that they are retranslating an illusion back into an idea. And only through doing that I feel a Christ is at work, a Savior is at work. That instead of an erroneous situation, I will have a right situation. Therefore, we always have these two translations combined when we go through the Christ vertical, namely the first translation vertically, the first translation which is in the absolute. In the first translation on page 115, you have nothing relative in it. It's God, man, idea are the side titles. And it's all in the positive. Then comes the second translation, the translation of mortal mind, showing how depravity is being translated back into the third degree of understanding of reality, and how in that third degree mortal mind and depravity disappears and the right idea, God's idea, is manifested. So these two translations are under consideration when we go through this vertical here. It's always showing God only translates itself as God's idea, absolute, but that idea does something in the human. And so the second index, the J index, will always show us what happens in the human. That the human will be translated back to the divine. So that the end product is always the divine. Alright. Let's start with the first point of intersection. What would we get if my thought runs along the line of the vertical, that principle always comes to me as principle's own idea? That's the translation. That principle comes to me, translates itself to me as a message, as a power that comes to me always as principle's own idea. And if I see horizontally that that is my proposition, I would say, all right, then I accept only that God comes to be as idea, and this retranslates the belief, and that's animal magnetism, that something else comes constantly to me. I free myself here of any other influence. I see suddenly here as my proposition that only principle comes to me, nothing else. That there is no other intelligence, no other power, no other reality that comes to me and has any influence on me. So, this is what Mrs. Eddy wants to bring out in the chapter on animal magnetism unmasked, that there is only one power, one intelligence at work, and that there is no opposite power at work coming to me, influencing me, and molding me according to mortal mind. So, what would you like to put here as the point of intersection in the Christ? Actually, what happened, it's not easy to say because so much happens there. It actually shows that the proposition is not to accept any other power, or not to accept the influence of any other power. Or, if you like to use the retranslation, that a God unlike power is reduced to nothingness. Something like this. I never like to pin me down, because it must be tonality and not words. Do you feel that standpoint? Where you feel at that point there is only one flow going on. There is only that flow from God to man, flowing from God to man, flowing from God to man, flowing from God to idea. Always the good. She says, she speaks there about the maximum of good that is at work, that only the maximum of good works and operates on me. And this retranslates the belief that any other power, the Antichrist, can be at work. See how it deals here with the Antichrist. That's Christ, that's the word. With the Antichrist. With the Antichrist is what? It's the belief that anything else except God comes to me. Yeah. Let's go to science, theology, and medicine. What do we get here? Again, we stick to the principle that translates itself as ideas of the principle. But here it does something as the Christ, namely that it manifests that principle as the idea of principle, in spite of the counterfeit. What we can get here would be that we have the translation of principle and says, I translate myself as mind and spirit and soul and principle and life, truth and love. These are my idea of principle. These are my constituents of principle. Horizontally, it would mean that that manifests itself in spite of the opposite. What is the opposite of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love? Therefore, it manifests itself in spite of mortal mind, in spite of matter, in spite of the testimony of the physical senses, in spite of theories, in spite of a dead theology, in spite of a medical sense of healing. Can you see, this is what the chapter means, that it says a principle translates itself as its own nature and retranslates the counterfeit nature of God back into the facts of being. Here we would find, so to say, the constituents of being. And that the constituents of being as a synonymous term, retranslate the counterfeits of the synonymous terms. Actually, when we go through that chapter, we'll see that this is the chapter, where she really brings out those great constituents of being, where she says in that chapter on science, theology, and medicine, you know, my constituents of being, which I give you, which I translate to you, are the synonymous terms, and they take the place of the counterfeits. Mortal mind, matter, sense testimony, physical science, natural science, false theology, false sense of medicine, and so this is my whole nature. We come to physiology. Again, in physiology, you would say, what is the outcome? See, we come to Christianity. What is the outcome of that translation? When principle translates itself to be as the synonymous terms and says, you are the idea of the synonymous terms, then it translates me out of a mortal into an immortal. So that here is the subject, how the mortal is retranslated into the state of being an immortal. Do you hear the tonality? Therefore, this is an improved state where we awake to our immortality, to our status of immortality. And you can see it is a higher state than before, than to have a sense to be a physiological proposition. Now suddenly we are an ideational proposition. So this gives a sense of demonstration, of exaltation, of improvement. Through what? Who has done that? Who has brought about this retranslation? The cause of it is because in being you have the translation from God to idea. And in that translation from God to idea, the synonymous term become reality to us, and in the measure as they become reality to us, we awake to our ideational sense of manhood. We go to the next point of intersection, Christ as science. Again, we can ask, what must it show? If the Christ comes to us in the absolute sense as ideas, therefore comes to us as a consciousness of ideas, then in science we see, oh, consciousness must have scientific constituents, and because the Christ retranslates, therefore it retranslates our false, unscientific constituents of consciousness into the scientific constituents of consciousness. I begin to realize there that I must change my consciousness, huh? That the Christ demands you can't go on with your human consciousness. It demands that I exchange the wrong constituents of my consciousness into the right constituents of a consciousness. Here I get really a divinely scientific consciousness. Yeah. Oh, did we say what we want to put into 6 and 7 and 8? No, huh? All right, what shall we put into 6? Well, let's put there something which always indicates that two translations go on, that there is a translation back somehow. So we can say that it retranslates the false constituents of being into the right constituents of being. It retranslates the wrong constituents of being into the right constituents of being. There was, oh, we don't know the textbook, so we shouldn't know. We are still on Robinson's Island, so I can't say what is it. But we will find afterwards that Mrs. Eddy would present it that way. Yes. Then in physiology, we could say, if we stay with retranslation, it retranslates the mortals into immortals. Retranslates mortals into immortals. And in Footsteps of Truth, in the 8th, it would show that it retranslates unscientific consciousness into scientific consciousness. That's why we would have there that beautiful combination of the divine and the human, that the human is divine and the divine is the human, that both the humanity and divinity are actually the same. It's only a matter of looking at it from two various standpoints. If we take in into our consciousness the divine, we have the divine in us, in the human. And so we see the humanity of divinity. We see that the divine can never be, that the divine is influencing and giving to the human its impact and begins to mold and form the human. And also we see that though we are in the human state, through consciousness we can touch the divine. Yeah. We retranslates unscientific consciousness into a scientific consciousness. These are then the footsteps. He shows how, step by step, we can retranslate our unscientific consciousness into a scientific consciousness. Yes. All right, that brings us to the end of the second vertical, and the rest we'll take this afternoon.